Raptors win! Raptors win! Get out the salami and cheese, mama! This ball game is over! There you go, folks. It's all good. It's all good.
Finally! It is WrestleMania weekend. Actually, no, I'm just kidding. It's TERP Podcast Episode 17. Welcome, everybody. It's Talib and Akshay here, welcoming you from TERP Episode 17. Thought it would be interesting to have everyone join us for this, one of the final season episodes, let's say. Like, final in-season episodes, right, Akshay?
Yeah, final in-season episodes where we're going to talk very little Raptors because
it's
nobody cares.
But it's, most importantly, it's WrestleMania weekend, right?
That's it is WrestleMania weekend. I did my picks for WrestleMania. There are like 45 matches. I'm going to be late to attend our WrestleMania party because I'm taping this.
Okay, first of all, I am not watching this WrestleMania party. Yeah. This is Akshay and his friends watching WrestleMania together. It's basically 6 or 7 guys getting together in a room watching 20 guys in tights battle it out for the championship match.
Yes. One of my buddies married into wrestling fandom. Because his wife is a big wrestling fan. So.
And now Akshay's all into it.
So now, yeah, he went on a Jericho cruise. So for anybody who doesn't know, there is a wrestling cruise you can go on.
Unlimited wrestling all over the place. Oh, it doesn't get better than that.
Ah, so how was the weekend, Tal, besides us making the finals in hockey today?
You know what? It's always good. And I was volunteering this morning for a friend's birthday. She has this voluntary event every year. And it was pretty good. And then I couldn't come for dinner. I couldn't come for lunch. And she's like, where are you going? I'm like, je vais jouer à la hockey. Because j'ai potential MVP. Although I'm not, I did not play that well. I don't think I played that well, but we did win. So it was good to get the win. Hopefully finals next week, which is heavily dependent on the Raptors schedule as much as it is.
We're playing at 11 a.m., so I don't think it's going to be that bad. Because they won't start a game before 12:30 anyways.
But like Raptors, we got to prep for it. I got to get my Raptor game on, everything. It all depends. Everything all depends. So what's happening in the world of NBA? Let's talk about that. Give me some... everyone knows about the important games that are happening here and there, like all the Eastern Conference. We'll get to that. But tell me something juicy about the NBA in the last little while.
Did you see Paul Pierce versus Wade, the debate?
What an exciting... My favorite part, if you guys haven't looked at it, look up Paul Pierce arguing that he's better than Wade. And the main fact he does is like, give me Shaq, give me LeBron in their prime, and I'll win like 5-6 rings. That's okay. The video of Jalen Rose saying why Wade is better than Paul Pierce and the camera zooming into Paul Pierce's face while Jalen Rose is saying that, priceless. I think that's on House of Highlights. It's hilarious. Someone edited this internet. It's just epic. I think he just dominates. He talks about like, I think the first thing he says is Wade was all NBA like multiple times. Paul, you were there once. And towards the end is like Wade won the title.
Scoring title?
No, Wade won the title 3 times. Right. Yeah. Paul won it once. And the other announcer is like, well, 3 is better than 1. So what a stupid thing, but just to see Dwayne Wade, we saw him play against the Raptors this evening. You know what? End of a great career. He is one of the most ridiculous players ever to play the game, the mid-range king. And it's sad to see him. I think he could have easily played like a couple of years. Paul Pierce didn't nearly have any say in the reception. I hated Paul Pierce just because he was so cocky and he was a Raptor killer. Dwayne Wade, not so much. So
yeah, the one series we had against Wade, we won. But that was way past LeBron leaving and everything. So they have 2 games left, the Heat, on Tuesday and Wednesday. So I'm wondering, like, they have a really tough chance now to make the playoffs. I wonder if Wednesday is going to be one of those. They're actually playing on the road for the last game. So their last home game is on Tuesday, and that game actually matters for them. So it's not going to be one of those Kobe, give him the ball, let him shoot 60 times games.
Yeah, it's going to be different.
They're going to actually play it.
They're going to try their level best to make the playoffs, right? So I think the Raptors had a really good last little stretch, but we'll go through that later. But what else is up?
Nothing else. I guess we're all just waiting for the playoffs now. I keep watching the games with kind of like, you know, a little bit of interest, but really just don't get injured, don't get injured, don't get injured. Like at this point, I'm really hoping that Golden State loses tonight, so that the Raptors are guaranteed to get the better record than them. And then on on whatever Tuesday against Minnesota, we start Chris Boucher and Jordan Lloyd and all these guys and just let the main guys just sit. I don't want to risk any injury. But if there is a chance that we don't get that, the tiebreaker, I mean, the same record as Golden State, I think they'll play it because they probably want home court advantage against Golden State if they make it that far.
That's a good thought process as well. But I think, you know what? The thing is that there's so much gap, like from now to like next Saturday, that's a week off. So yeah, if you're playing on Tuesday, I'd play the main guys, like, you know, 15 minutes, first quarter, second quarter, that's it. And then bring Chris Boucher or like all the like Jeremy Lin's, and I can't believe Jeremy Lin's in that category right now. Just let them play it out. But you got to get these guys, like a week is off. A week off is a long time. And we've seen a lot of like last little while, we've seen Milwaukee lose to Brooklyn 2 days ago. So it's been all over the place. Records have gone a little bit wonky just because people, you know, you're not caring as much. People are resting. So I saw the Golden State versus Lakers game. I swear the first quarter, Golden State was like, we're toying with these Lakers. And they were like, you know what? They were up by like 25 points in the first quarter. And I was like, these guys can beat the crap out of them by 50. And then they just put their, you know, their bench in, their sub bench. It's not even the regular bench. It's like bench.
Yeah, yeah. The bench is bench. Yeah, it's like the third stringers.
Coming in.
I think you're going to see a lot of that on Tuesday when they play the Wolves. Okay, so this week we're going to mix it up. We're not going to go through every game just because these games are really not that interesting to go through. There's a lot of Nick Nurse experimenting with lineups and things like that. So what we're going to do is we're going to start with some likes and dislikes, but we're going to do them for the entire season and how we feel entering the playoffs, really. So Tal, let's go with some likes and dislikes.
I don't even know where you're sitting at. Like.
Okay, so I guess I'll start with some likes. My likes entering the playoffs, I mean, I wrote this and I wrote, fingers crossed, health, number one. I mean, outside of McCaw, everybody looks healthy.
I'm knocking on wood right now.
Yeah, knock on everything you can.
This is I'm so scared. Every time like Kyle goes down or Kawhi goes down, I get like a heart attack. Yeah. Oh, please get back up, please. Please don't be like this.
I like their swag going into the playoffs. I think this is like the most confident bunch of Raptors that I've ever seen. I like the rotation, I think is kind of set now.
Yeah.
It's gonna be nine, I think, in the playoffs.
Who's gonna be the? We can talk
about it. I think Norm will play. Yeah. Norm and OG will play.
Norm, OG, and Serge.
And Fred. Van Vliet. So nine.
Yeah.
I really like the fact that our 3-point shooting was 27th before Marc Gasol came here. Now it's sixth overall. It's been one. He's arrived.
But I was going to talk about that as well because I think that's like the most incredible thing in the world.
So, I mean, that was my, like, I think I spent the first like 12 episodes of this podcast like crying about 3-point shooting. And now it's been great, actually, because I guess they're just getting, I guess some of it is they've come back to, you know, their averages and then health and things like that. But they're also getting like really wide open threes. So that helps.
Absolutely. What are you not liking? Should I go with my likes? I'll go with my likes.
Do your likes.
Okay, I'll go with my likes. Again, you know, just want to hit that 3-point percentage. Absolutely right. We're 41% in 3-point field goal percentage since the trade deadline. So I almost look at it as almost like two seasons within one. You've got the first season from October to February, and after February hits, where all these trade pieces happen, it's almost like you have a new team, right? You're gelling with everyone. You're trying to figure it out, and that's the most incredible thing. We're like third overall in the league with number one in 3-point field goal percentage since February 7th at 41%. So we're doing really well. And the key thing is we didn't like acquire any 3-point specialists. We didn't get rid of any like really poor 3-point shooters who were taking volume threes in that matter. Obviously CJ Miles being one of them, but it wasn't like a big thing. The biggest thing happened was the assists, right? So when you look at the assists, Marc Gasol's addition to the lineup, we were 15th in the league in assists per game. Now we're third in the league with 27 assists a game. So it's incredible what a big man like Marc Gasol does, because he's if you see his passes, he's normally above the around the top of the corner, you know, right under the 3-point line, making that quick pass, and he's normally making that quick pass to the corner. And what happens is we're number one in corner three attempts, which is really good because we're doing unbelievable in that. And 66%, just got some numbers here, 66% in field goals assisted. That's pretty incredible. Like, all our assisted field goal, our field goals, 66% of them are assisted, which is shows a good team. And only we're third in the league in that. Only two teams above that is Golden State and Denver. Just to know, before the Marc Gasol trade, we were 22nd. So that jump in assist ratio has, like, changed the three-point game for us. And it's amazing that it didn't require a addition of a spot-up shooter, three-point shooter. It's just getting these guys open looks.
Yeah.
Open looks and, like, making the right screen ball. And I've seen Kyle Lowry make the screen. I've seen Kawhi Leonard make that screen to get Pascal. Pascal's getting open three corner threes because he's moving, zipping around real quick. But it's the other guys setting screens for him. Big fan.
Yeah, I think like these guys are NBA players, and getting them the ball a second earlier makes a huge difference. Right?
Oh,
like,
it's incredible.
And so in their percentages, because if you ever watch these guys shoot in practice, like we can hate on, you know, like, you can pick any poor 3-point shooter, like, we can hate on, like, say Serge, but if you ever see Serge in practice, like, he's making probably 60-80% of his threes. Like, it's effortless for them.
It's kind of crazy. Like, you know, we were in Detroit like 3-4 weeks ago, and we're watching these guys because we're there at the stadium an hour early just to see all these players go through their warm-ups. They're not missing. Mm-hmm. Like, they're hitting every shot. Like, it's like, it's easy stuff, right? So it's like, it's pretty incredible when you have guys like that and they're shooting with a guy in their face and just someone running onto them that's still at high percentage. And one small change a microsecond makes a huge difference. So it's really cool to see. What are you not liking?
Yeah, so I think my dislikes are probably Norm and OG. I think I don't like their inconsistency. I wish I could count on them a little bit more, but it's okay. They're a bench. You know, that's kind of how it is. Kind of sad that we can't rely on Lin for anything right now. Like, I thought when we got him that I wasn't expecting him to be a big piece, but kind of play that DeLon Wright role where, like, maybe one game in the series, he may have a hot game and, like, drop 12, 15 points for you and, you know, a couple of assists. Like, I don't even think he's going to do that for you now. And as a team, I mean, this is just a general thing overall, and the whole year is rebounding. They're not a very good rebounding team. There's going to be a game, or there's going to be a time in the playoffs where they're going to miss a really important rebound and it's going to hurt them badly. And they may lose a game because they didn't box out or something like that. And I would say as a team, that is probably their biggest weakness right now, is rebounding. How about you?
I've got the same similar stuff. I think one of the biggest ones that I dislike is Lin. He's played horribly. Like, he's not been the type of player that I think can hit up. Like, he's just been not his game. The transition game has not suited him as much as the Raptors, and the Raptors play a very passing offense. And he gets in the lane, and he's going for that shot. Also, he's not getting a lot of the calls. So he's rushing it, so he's... Like, he's jacking up poor shots where I think he expects, like, a foul call or anything. So he's not getting that. That's the unfortunate part. And they've tried to get some open looks. So it's kind of sad to see that. And I think the rebounding with you, but I think points in the paint is the one that does scare me a bit. With losing Jonas Valanciunas, we were really good in points in the paint. And now we're like 23rd in the league. And that does strike a little bit of fear, because what happens is when your shooting goes cold, like your 3-point shooting and all that stuff goes cold, you need that points in the paint to get that free. You know what I'm talking? Like, you need that pass to the big man, boom. In playoffs, it's even more. That's why I think teams like Detroit's not that good at points in the paint, but they have those big guys who can really get those as well going, right? That's the unfortunate thing. So that's one thing I'm scared about. And that obviously translates to rebounding as well. But if we shoot the way we do, we're doing really well, and we trust our players to make those passes, it's going to be exciting to watch.
Yeah, if they're shooting threes the way they have the last month, it's not an issue. When they got Gasol, they basically traded good twos for more open threes. Like, that was in terms of their offense, that's kind of what's happened, right? They traded off the twos that Jonas would get for more open threes for Pascal in the corner and Danny Green in the corner and things like that. So I mean, it's a decision that they made as a front office to, you know, three is worth more than two, so you kind of roll with it. But you're right, if they go cold and you really want that person you can dump it down to, I mean, I feel like Marc Gasol could still do it. He just hasn't done it because they've been hot since he's come. You know, so maybe there's a point in the playoffs he does it.
Absolutely. All right. Let's do the next segment.
All right. Do your ad. Tell them what we're sponsored by.
The end of season is upon us, and now is the time to shine. Spring is here, and Kawhi is ready to ball. It's playoffs time. It's time to be Robert Horry for the Spurs or the Lakers. Time to make that clutch swipe to get that impression. This is why Tinted Photography, who have been a prominent supporter for the Terp podcast, is ready to roll with you during the moments that matter. Let's get that smile ready, bring your outfits, and let's look great in those backdrops, because we need to get you right swiped and get you to meeting people right away. Tinterphotography.ca, proud supporter of the Terp podcast.
Very good. Short one today. So I guess our last segment today that we want to do is, since it's the last episode before the regular season ends, we're just going to talk about our end of season awards. We would have definitely done a preview of the first round if we knew who the Raptors were playing, so but we don't, because the bottom of the Eastern Conference is such a mess still. So we're going to do end of season rewards. So there are six awards that are given out during the playoffs, or not even the playoffs anymore, at the end of whenever they do their NBA awards show, which I think is the worst show ever. But the coach of the year, the defensive player of the year, the most improved, the rookie of the year, the sixth man of the year, and then the MVP. So I think we'll see. Me and Talib basically did this offline, and we'll see if we agree or disagree on them, and if we feel like they're going to be closer or large margins of victory. So let's start with, what do you want to start with? You want to start with the coach of the year?
Yeah, let's start. You know what? Yeah, let's start with the coach of the year. There's some of the ones I don't see there'll be disagreements, because there's been so much hype and so much media around it that everyone else would probably agree. So I don't want to like spend too much time on that. So let's start a cool coach there, because that's a really interesting one. I personally think Doc Rivers deserves this one. Mm-hmm. Doc Rivers, I think there's a few reasons why. One is the Clippers are in the playoffs. They've lost one of their top players in Tobias Harris. They play a very different team ball. They've used Montrezl Harrell. I don't know what it is. They use him really well, and they use Lou Williams really well. Like, Lou Williams obviously has been Lou as well, but they've used those two guys really well. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's improvement has been phenomenal. So it's really cool to see. And the craziest thing is that they're all free agents. So that's why I give a lot of credit to like Doc Rivers, because he's been able to bring a team together that practically knows that they're not going to be able to re-sign half of these guys. Got them playing team ball, so not everyone is going for their individual accolades here, trying to get like 20 points a game, 15 points a game. And be able to be a fun team to watch. They're a really fun team to watch. And I think Doc Rivers deserves a credit. And that's why I think he's probably one of the amazing coaches at doing something like this. And it kind of shows his versatility as a coach. He coached the big three in Boston with superstars. And now he's coaching a bunch of like no names almost to like success in LA Clippers. And that's kind of cool to see.
So do you think Doc Rivers will win it, or he should win it?
I think he should win it. I think... personally,
who do you think will win it?
I think it's going to be Budenholzer.
Yeah, I think Budenholzer is going to win it. And I think he should win it too, because at the end of the day, they took the biggest jump in wins. And from a coaching perspective, it's very obvious to see the coaching effect on that team. Like they've changed their offense up and things like that. Yeah. I don't know if it's going to work in the playoffs because it's predictable. But then again, they have Giannis, so you never know. He could just still be fantastic, even though the offense is predictable. Yeah. Do you think it's going to be a close or a large margin of victory?
I think it's going to be a close one. I think my question is, if you have Giannis, does that negate you from being a coach of the year? Because you have a player like an MVP almost having in your team. Yes, I agree. The offense has changed and it's been completely different. But it's also, I think, comes down to coach of the year is unfairly judged by the expectations of each coach, right?
Like, the narrative. It's really a narrative.
It's a narrative, right? The story. Yeah. The story of this almost was, they knew Milwaukee was going to be good, but not this good, right? They knew Clippers weren't going to be good. Weren't going to be good at all. They're like, they're the better team in LA. Nate McMillan's a really good one as well. Michael Malone is also very good. Like, these are all these narratives that people expected them to be different. The one I think really deserves credit, and I've told you about this, is Quinn Snyder, the Utah coach. Utah has a better record than last year. They're playing in a very difficult division, and conference. They've played really well. Their defensive game is number one, in my opinion, number one in the last 2 months. but they also have against the defensive player of the year, right? So same argument could be made, like if you have an MVP or a defensive player of the year, is that a coaching thing, or is that more of a team, like a player thing, right? That's why I think Doc Rivers deserves it, just because I think he's got an unbelievable like plethora of players that have played really well for him. So it's interesting to see, but I think there are a lot of good coaches who I think would deserve it as much as it is. Michael Malone's also another one. Like Denver Nuggets is a fantastic offensive team.
Yeah, no, I think there's lots of good candidates. You know what? One last thing on coaching before we go to the other ones. I don't think Nick Nurse deserved to win this award. I don't really know who deserves to win this award any year, to be honest. But I was shocked that he had nothing said about him the whole year. Like, I get that he took over a 59-win team, so you can't really go much up on that. But if you look at the team, like, it's a different team. And the injuries that we've had this year. I mean, last year when Casey won it, we probably had one of the healthiest seasons ever. And this year we had pretty much the opposite. And so I was surprised that there was never like any discussion about Nick Nurse. But, you know, as you said, it's all narrative.
I think it comes down to players as well. With Nick Nurse, you've got Kawhi Leonard. Like it does come down when you've got, it's almost you're expected to do well because you have players like Kawhi or and Pascal as well. Like I think it does come down to narrative and expectation. The expectation for the Raptors were to be like conference finals, like straight mm-hmm. off the bat. Like doesn't matter. Like you take Nurse away, you put anyone else in, the expectation still stays the same. That's what it is.
Yeah. No, I agree. Defensive player of the year. So the nominees, I guess, the people who are in the conversation right now are Paul George, Gobert, Giannis, Embiid, and then Miles Turner. So those are like the popular choices. There's no real nominees for this type of stuff, but it's the ones that people are talking about. Yeah. I picked Gobert, and I think it's actually going to be really close. I think this might be the closest one because there's nobody that's super obvious, but he leads the league in defensive real plus minus. They're a very different team when he's on the court versus when he's not. He basically erases a lot of the mistakes that the guards make at the rim. So that's why I think Gobert is going to win it, but I could make an argument for a lot of these guys. I actually think the stats will always favor the big guy because they can clean up a lot of the mess. Mm-hmm. But I think more importantly, players who can guard multiple positions and do it well are more important in today's league than the big guy who's really awesome. But the numbers are always going to favor the like Gobert because he's just cleaning up mess, right?
Yeah, because you're looking at the main numbers that people look at is like rebounds, blocks, like those are the two big ones, right? Like those are the big ones that stand out to you, like most defensive players, and steals for guards. But you're absolutely right. I think you got to be able to like. I think more and more in a few years, we'll probably see more different changes in the way different stats are collected to actually measure the defensive player of the year. Like, I would love to see this being broken down into like guards and forwards, in my opinion, because it's completely different. It's completely mm-hmm. different. Like, you can say Gobert's a really good defensive player for a defensive player in that sense for a forward or a centerman, but I would love to have like, I put like, if you're looking at guards wise, you know, putting in the Clippers guard. Who's the Clippers guard? Pat Beverly.
Dude, yeah, yeah.
100%. Like Pat Beverly is a pest. Like he's made life living hell for. If you look at the players he's played against, and the reason why Clippers have won is Pat Beverly. He's put a lot of pressure on that. Right. He may not show the steals, but we don't look at offensive field goal percentage as like a very offensive field goal percentage from a different angle, right? So mm-hmm. if you're looking at Pat Beverly, he's guarding Chris Paul, or he's guarding like, you know, some of the premier point guards in the league, like Kemba, and how he's been able to limit their offense, it's hard, but it won't show up on the stat sheet.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree. And I think even somebody like Siakam, who if you look at his advanced stats on the fact that he guards literally one through five even a lot of the times.
Yeah, yeah.
Those types of players are very, very valuable. And it's hard to quantify unless you're day in, day out watching these teams, which nobody watches all 30 teams at that intensity to really understand where it's like. So then we fall back even into advanced defensive metrics, but you still like, how can you really gauge, you know, say Gobert's impact versus say a Siakam's impact? Because they just play such different roles defensively. So it's hard, but I think this year it's going to go to Gobert. Who do you think?
I think Gobert as well. Yeah. I think the prime mention is the Jazz are a unbelievably better team defensively compared to with him in or off the court. I think it's 97 points per 100 possessions compared to 105. So they're like fantastically defensively. Yeah. Let's go to most improved player.
Okay. So, I mean, this is a two horse race. It's really Siakam and Russell. You can make the argument for, say, Fox or Vucevic or something like that, but I think it's going to go down to those two. I picked Siakam. I don't think this is going to be close. I think the American media or whatever that was, talking about this 2 weeks ago was really just talking about it because it was like a quiet time in the league and you need something to talk about. And so you just basically play devil's advocate. I don't think this is really going to be that close. I think Siakam is better defensively. His team is better. He's made the most statistical jumps. Like he's up. What was that?
Raptors Pascal Siakam like YouTube clip I was looking at and I already started off
and so he's up 8 points per game versus Russell's 4 points per game and so like I think just pure numbers, and this is kind of what this award is, he's gonna win it. I think Siakam's gonna win. What do you think?
Oh, this is Siakam because I'm ridiculously biased. I'm honest right now. It's Pascal Siakam. Pascal Siakam is a beast. Jokes aside, yeah, you're right, numbers, everything went in. But when you look at certain numbers and advanced stats, I think one of the most interesting one, as a Raptor fan, you've seen him do a lot of transition. You know that there's certain plays that are actually made out for him in transition, which is like phenomenal that Nick Nurse calls out. So I started looking at his percentage, field goal percentage on transition. He's like a 70% field goal percentage on transition, which is ridiculous considering he doesn't even dunk the ball. It's like layups. Like majority, it's not dunks. Like you've got like players who are like LeBron and Giannis who've done this in the past who are dunkers. Like they dunk. But this guy is so crafty within the rim itself that he's able to lay it up with big guys and be able to find plays really well. So that's even more incredible. He's leading the league in this field goal and transition. And just to give you a comparison on stats-wise, advanced stats on this one, LeBron James has led the stat for the last few years. We remember like 2 years ago when LeBron was LeBron, like he just run over people. And LeBron and Giannis have basically shared this award the last 3-4 years. So Siakam's leading this one. And it's amazing to see because you don't think of him as like an explosive player. Like he doesn't come to your mind like, oh, he's like Giannis or LeBron. He has this finesse touch, which is somehow pretty unique. You know, not exactly like you would think I'd dunk it over a layup, but if that keeps the energy low and he's able to maintain his energy, sure, let's do that.
He's got a lot of great footwork that allows him to do this.
It's incredible. Like
he did the double spin move last game. Did
absolutely.
You see that? That's awesome.
Absolutely.
Rookie of the year, let's do that. This is Doncic, Young, and Ayton. I think it's going to be Doncic. I mean, this one, the narrative on this one has been going on for the last like 5 months, I feel like.
Yeah, I don't want to spend too much time on these next ones because it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, so here's the thing. I agree. I think Doncic is going to be very large margin. But you know what? One thing I have to say is Trae Young had a lot of bad PR come in his way the first half of the season because he wasn't playing well, and then he was traded for Luka, right? Yeah. And he's kind of played really well the second half. So I'm happy for him that like he's closed the gap on this. Because now Atlanta fans and like the media and stuff will stop talking about the two of them. I still think Doncic will have a better career. But something that people forget is that, yes, they took Trae Young and they traded Luka Doncic, but they got an extra pick, which is pretty high up for doing that. Right?
I think they got protected for future first round pick.
Yeah. So they basically got Young and a first round pick, which is high up for Doncic. So it's not bad. It's not like the Fultz Tatum trade where they gave up a pick and took Fultz.
Oh, that's a nightmare. Like, as well.
Yeah, so that one. So I think this one, I'm happy for Young. But yes, I think Doncic is going to win it. Sixth man of the year, Sabonis, Williams.
I didn't get a chance to talk. You spoke the entire thing.
Sorry. Right, go ahead. You said you didn't want to spend time on it.
I'm going to say Doncic is going to win.
Okay. Thank you.
Same reason. Okay. Doncic's gonna win. Exactly, you say the exact reason. Plus, to be honest, the reason I think is as simple as that he has been the main guy for Dallas all season long, and Trae Young has now become the main. He's played amazing in the latter half of the season, but I think Doncic's put up great numbers. Don't get me wrong, both have amazing numbers, so you can't compare number to number. And then the next thing you go to is team impact. I think they both have absolute zero impact on their teams at the moment. Like, they're both garbage teams. So it's Doncic just because his numbers have been higher for the most of the season. That's all.
Sixth man of the year. So Williams, Sabonis, Dinwiddie. Those are really probably the big three that I think. You tell me who you want. Who you go first.
You know what? I'd want Sabonis to win because I don't think he's going to win. I think Lou Williams deserves it as much as this, but Sabonis is the most underrated player in this Eastern Conference. I think he is phenomenal. And I've spoken about him in past podcasts. He plays an old school game. He's been so effective for Indiana, especially with the whole Victor Oladipo thing. He's averaging pretty decent points. I think he's averaging like 13 to 14 points a game. He's been very critical to the success. But in the end, you come down to Lou Williams. And Lou Williams has been, you know, he's been Lou Williams. Like, that's the Lou Williams that we know. And it's Lou Williams, he's won the Sixth Man of the Year multiple times. I think they should just rename this award, the Lou Williams Award. He's going to win it again just because he's been able to bring that spark off the bench. And he plays really well on that pick and roll offense with Harrell. And like, I've seen some of these games, and you know what he's going to do. It's pick and roll. He's either making that quick pass to Harrell for the dunk, or he's taking that jump shot, an open jump shot, because Harrell puts good screens and they're getting that bucket. It is phenomenal. It's like automatic. I think I've seen this multiple times. They've torched LA so many times.
Yeah. So I think, remember he used to do the sidestep threes? That's also his signature move. So I think it's going to be Williams. I don't think this one's going to be very close. He's the only one who's the number one scorer on a team, and he comes off the bench, right? Like, yeah, he's the only one. So like, it's not even really that close. He's the only one who's been given the keys to score as much as he wants to. That comes off the bench. The last award.
Although, let me ask you this. I hated having Lou Williams in the Raptors. Not a fan. Yeah.
Because he scores, but he gives it all back on the other end.
Oh, he's garbage defensively. Garbage.
He's obviously, like, they've got some better team players around him to, like, because the teams that he played on the Raptors, they just weren't good defensive teams in general, right? So no, it's like everything
I think,
is.
I think his game is very one-sided, to be honest with you. It's a very offensive game. Defensively, he's atrocious. And LA Clippers do. That's why I think Doc Rivers does a really, really good job in hiding one defense.
That's why he comes off the bench, so he can play against the bench guys more.
He does close the games out in the end, right? So when you're doing that defensive segments in that sense, they have a really good defensive structure in place for him, and it's because that's one of the reasons why I think he's a one dimensional scorer. I'd say with him, like, it's very similar to Jamal Crawford, one dimensional scorer, score, 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 no defensive game at all. They're not going to win any championship. My thought is.
I don't know who's going to win with him being their number one scorer. Okay, the last award is MVP. It's Giannis versus Harden.
Yeah.
I think this one's going to be close, like, in the voting. I think it's going to go to Giannis, and I would vote for Giannis too. Who'd you vote for?
Man, I've been singing praises for Giannis all season long, man. Giannis is a beast. But I'll tell you, there's two ways to look at this. One is like, MVP, like, without James Harden, this Houston Rockets team is a piece of shit.
Okay, but look, even without, have you seen them play without Giannis?
Yeah, they played a couple of games without Giannis. Yeah. It looked atrocious too. So that's what I think. Like, these two candidates are like so perfect for this, because without either one of them, their team is like lost.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you really see this losing effect. Like, you're like, I don't know, who the hell takes the next shot of the ball? Like, Giannis or Harden. If Harden goes, okay, you go to Chris Paul. But Chris Paul can easily be mitigated. Like, he can. Like, without anyone else, he can easily be mitigated in that sense. I just think the way Harden's played after the first, they were first 20 games were really bad. And then Harden's like, okay, you know what? They need me to be MVP Harden again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that ability to turn that on is phenomenal. To shoot that much, that ISO ball and make those shots is something unique we're seeing in the league. But I still go with Giannis. But I think, I don't know, man. Harden is another beast, and I don't think we're ever going to see a player like this ever again who can, like, he's like Kobe-esque, you know, like, I want the ball, I'm shooting it, I'm going to win it.
Yes. I think we're both on Giannis. The reason I picked Giannis is simple. One word, defense. Like, that was it. That was the reason I picked him. But I heard a good argument on one of the podcasts, probably Zach Lowe's podcast, for Harden, which is the first time I thought, like, okay, that makes sense. So they said Giannis is needs a scheme around him that's very specific to Giannis. And basically, Milwaukee's built like the perfect scheme around him, which is put a bunch of shooters around him and good defensive players, and, you know, hide the fact that he can't shoot at all, right? And so for him to excel, he really needs that scheme. Whereas Harden needs nothing. Like, Harden could, you could put me, you, and like two of our buddies around Harden, and he's still going to drop it. You know, drop 30, 40, 50.
I think that's completely BS, though, in my opinion. I really think so. I mean, like, scheme, every MVP player, every player needs a good coaching system around them, right, to succeed. Otherwise, you're going to end up being like Devin Booker on Phoenix, who can score 30 points a game and still be dominant and not win. Like, yes, both of them. I think when you look at the arguments for Giannis, I really think it's a consistency. Consistency both ends of the floor, defensive and offensive, that makes him win. I don't think it's a scheme. I think the scheme around him is different now compared to last year. Yes, just he's, even last year he was phenomenal, but yeah, it's a different game. And I don't think he can shoot. He's a decent shooter. He's not bad.
But Giannis?
I don't think he's Harden level. You're comparing to shooter level. This guy plays a forward game. He's athletically gifted. Let me ask you that. LeBron James was not a good shooter.
Yeah, he's still not a good shooter.
He's not a good shooter. And we put him on a pedestal to look. So I think it's like, if you're looking at, we shouldn't look at shooting being the only metric. I think Harden, he does that really well. Shooting, driving, all that kind of stuff. But I think full package is important for MVP. Giannis, offensively, transition, his shooting is not bad. I don't think it's bad. I really don't think it's that bad. Yeah, I take a risk on him. If I got to keep any of the guys open for 3-point shooting, Giannis is getting that open look. Yes, but that's the risk I'm going to take with Milwaukee. That's just the way to play the game. But I think the scheme thing, I don't think it's a scheme thing, and like having Harden. Harden just plays ISO ball like Kobe did.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He doesn't need a scheme. Whereas you need a scheme. But you need a scheme for Giannis. So that's kind of like...
Let me ask you this. You put Harden in like a team environment, I don't think he succeeds at all.
No, I still think he succeeds. You
put Harden in any other offense, like you put Harden in Toronto's offense, he will not succeed.
Score as many points? No, but to succeed, he'll be fine. Harden's still an MVP level player, but would he have the same number of points? No.
No, I think it's just because he shoots so much. He shoots a lot, man. He shoots a lot, and he has to because there's no one else who does it really well in our team. Yeah. So that's all it is. Like, I think the scheme is like different for each player. Like, Harden needs an ISO scheme. Giannis doesn't, and it's like two separate players, two separate things.
All right, we'll leave it on that. Yeah. We'll leave it on that. I just checked it. Giannis shoots 25% from three. It's actually worse than I thought it was.
Okay, Joel Embiid shoots like 24% from three. Okay.
No, I think Joel Embiid shoots higher than him. But both of them are not good. I mean, if we're facing those two teams, leave those guys open. You want to beat us with threes, knock yourself out, guys.
Yep, amen.
Okay, cool. So we'll see if we can do a little playoff preview sometime this week.
Emergency pod
to see, you know, preview the opponent that we're facing. Maybe I think it'll either be Orlando or Brooklyn at this point, but we'll see. And then we'll analyze the playoffs. Hopefully we get to do a lot more podcasts because the Raptors are going to stay in the playoffs for, a couple months. June, right?
Hopefully, yeah, let's see. Hopefully, June.
Okay, cool. Anything else out?
No, that's all. Appreciate all the support, guys. Thanks for listening again. Again, like our post on Instagram, the Untitled Raptors Pod, and send us a message if you have any requests or anything you want us to go over before the playoffs. And who do you think I want to see the Raptors face in the playoffs? The answer is easy. Anyone but Detroit Pistons. Boom, go.
Really? Even though Orlando's hot?
Orlando doesn't scare me. Detroit Pistons, like, that's a different offense.
Casey scares you.
Yeah, that's what it is. Casey is something about that old man suit game, which is like, you know, I feel like he's like a mafia member in that suit. That's what it is.
Those large Tracy McGrady-like suits. Although Tracy McGrady's improved his suit game.
Yeah, no, this is some large, bad suits. Yeah. That's what I'm scared of.
Yeah, Nick Nurse wins the suit game for sure. Okay, that's good. We'll see everybody sometime this week for an emergency pod on who the Raptors first face in the playoffs.
All right, enjoy WrestleMania.
Enjoy, everybody. Bye.